WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ventry says he hasn't gotten any more records requests since the episode last year. The requester may have been chastened by a New York Times piece that ran with the headline, "Industries Turn Freedom of Information Requests on Their Critics." It's a problem that pits a good thing, public records laws, against another good thing, unfettered research at public universities. The California legislature recently tried to untangle that Gordian knot, and our producer Alana Casanova-Burgess looked into the effort.
The records request for Dennis Ventry's emails came while he was in Washington, D.C.
Well, I hadn't received one before, and so it freaked me out a little bit.
He had just been at a meeting of the IRS Advisory Council, in which the Free File Alliance, representing some for-profit tax preparers, had given a presentation.
I was freaked out, because then I had to hop on a plane immediately, and I couldn't really talk to anybody. I landed and spent, like, hours until the wee hours of the morning going through my emails just to see what was there.
What would something bad have been, you know?
I mean, these are my very close colleagues at different universities that I've had relationships with for a long time, so we're talking like friends talk.
Scientists have long been looking for a solution to this problem of essentially fishing expeditions, attempts not to seek the truth or reveal misconduct, but to find something to embarrass a researcher.
Michael Halpern is with the Union of Concerned Scientists, and he's been advocating for legislation to address the problem of what he calls the exploitation of public records laws.
Someone is talking about how they're interpreting a specific data set, and their colleague says, I don't think you're looking at the whole picture here. I think you're missing all of these critical components in your analysis.
That's healthy in science. But taken out of context, he says, the spin will read like this.
The scientists don't even agree on what the critical components of the analysis are here.
Exhibit A of this kind of distortion is what's known as ClimateGate. That's when, in 2009, hacked emails to and from climate researchers at the University of East Anglia were released. The haul included correspondence with U.S. scientists, notably Michael Mann, then at the University of Virginia. Exchanges they had about data were twisted by climate denial groups.
And after a number of investigations, all of the researchers and their work was found to be solid, but the damage had been done.
If you thought the toxic clouds of ClimateGate had lifted, well, think again. It's gone all sort of polluted here in Copenhagen.
Scientists had been sent a message that every email, every single peer review comment would be poured over and misrepresented to put forth an agenda.
After the media maelstrom, Mann was issued a subpoena from the Virginia Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, and a public records request from a conservative think tank that's now called the Energy and Environment Legal Institute.
Well, it isn't what I signed up for when I decided to get a degree in applied math and physics and go on to study climate science.
Michael Mann speaking to MSNBC's Chris Hayes.
I didn't realize that I would be at the center of a widespread attack, an effort to undermine the credibility of not just me, but my scientific colleagues in a cynical effort to discredit concern for climate change.
Mann fought the records request in court for years and eventually won. But the tactic of trying to use those requests to silence or embarrass public university professors took off. Eric Lipton is a New York Times investigative reporter who often uses records requests himself. He's seen the issue evolve over the past decade or so.
This was particularly frequently used during the Obama administration and the debate over climate change.
Conservative groups and coal industry lawyers used it.
Then some of the liberal environmental groups began to seek emails from university professors at state institutions who questioned the reality of climate change, seeking to see what correspondence they had with industry players.
From there, it metastasized.
For example, were pesticide and genetically modified seed companies funding university professors? Was the organic industry funding university professors who were opponents of genetically modified foods?
There have been many examples in recent years. A gun rights group requested records from professors researching the effect of lead bullets. A conservative group requested emails from a law professor who had criticized Jeff Sessions. Pharmaceutical companies and soda companies and advocacy groups request materials. And so do reporters. Take, for instance, a 2016 WBEZ investigation which uncovered how a University of Illinois professor was discussing where checks should be sent for his advocacy. The financial arrangement was not disclosed.
Emails show he traveled in the U.S. and Asia to speak about genetically modified foods. At the same time, he was getting tens of thousands of dollars from GMO giant Monsanto Company to take those trips and do, quote, outreach.
And there's the case of a child psychiatrist who enrolled kids younger than 13 in a study on lithium and then tried to cover up the misconduct. And the case of how the Koch brothers donated money to George Mason University and then were given a voice in hiring and firing professors. All investigations that used information gleaned from records requests.
I think the question is, what is the cost of the current method of unearthing misconduct in that way? You know, it's basically suspicionless searches for everybody all the time.
Claudia Polsky is the director of the Environmental Law Clinic at UC Berkeley and author of a paper published last year called Open Records, Shuttered Labs: Ending Political Harassment of Public University Researchers. She says, yes, there are instances of wrongdoing, but
there are huge collateral consequences to the ways public records requests are being used against researchers, many of whom have done nothing wrong but are chilled in their research, pulled off task for no reason, perhaps moved to a state with more favorable records laws. That's happened. Perhaps defect from the university for private practice. That's happened. You don't see any of that. What you see is, say, the one scandal out of the 50 records requests that, you know, caught a fish. You know, scandal is visible. Chill is not visible.
Laws regarding public university transparency vary state to state. In Pennsylvania, for instance, the state's higher education systems are generally exempt from the public records law. There was recently an effort to address the issue in California, an influential state with an enormous public university system. The proposal was to carve out an exemption for public university researchers, meaning their correspondence and their unpublished research methods would be shielded from open records requests. Polsky supported it in a hearing last month.
AB 700 is a careful solution that I've endorsed, along with more than 180 academics across California in every academic discipline.
Also at that hearing was Kevin Baker of the California ACLU.
We don't believe that you can take the important tool of the California Public Records Act from the people that you don't think are using it appropriately without also taking it away from those who use it for important purposes. And for that reason, we remain opposed. Thank you.
The Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press has come out against the bill, calling it well-intentioned but ill-considered. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, a digital rights group, is also opposed, as is the California News Publishers Association. Several animal rights groups say the bill would hide inhumane research methods. In California, the Public Records Act explicitly states that, quote, secrecy is antithetical to a democratic system. Whitney Prout is staff attorney at the California News Publishers Association. She and other opponents said they're willing to refine the bill so it works for both sides. But
I mean, we're certainly not there yet. And maybe we'll get there. Maybe we won't.
The bill's supporters stress that disciplinary records would still be accessible, as would correspondence between researchers and funders. So watchdogs could still investigate financial influence. Prout doesn't buy that.
That's not sufficient because all it would take is creating one intermediary along the way.
A middleman, in other words, who would represent the funder seeking to influence the research. And those communications could be secret. Plus, there are already exemptions to address unreasonable, harmful requests, and researchers have had success in using them in court. It's losing that flexibility, changing the default setting to no disclosure, that makes journalists I spoke to for this piece nervous about the effort in California.
It completely strips away any of that flexibility or case-by-case analysis for a court to say, okay, what's going on in this situation? Are there compelling interests here that might call for the disclosure of this information or that might call for the information to be protected?
But backers of the bill, like Michael Halpern of the Union of Concerned Scientists, say that asking researchers to prove their work merits an exemption is too onerous. It can take years.
Their choice should not be between having to go to court and spending hundreds of hours of their time and maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars of university funds to adjudicate each and every Freedom of Information Act request.
And that is an argument that could be made by every single public agency.
Whitney Prout.
You know, if that's the rationale, then the entire Public Records Act could be done away with. And I don't think anyone thinks that's in the best interest of the public.
And then there's the slippery slope argument. The Open Records Act is a tool to help keep our elected officials and government employees accountable. So if public university professors are exempt, who's next?
This is where we get into my basic argument, which is that universities are different.
Polsky says they're not your typical government official.
They don't have coercive power over anyone in a way that undergirds public records laws. I mean, the point is democratic accountability of your elected representatives. That's not what university scholars are.
But they are government employees.
They are in the sense that they get taxpayer money. And so there should be accountability that attaches there. But I think it's a different kind of accountability. And what's really important is to protect the core mission of the university, which is not governance of the public. It's generating knowledge that's useful to society.
Both sides of this debate in California can agree that harassment should not be condoned, that unfettered research is a public good, and that open records laws are critical to accountability. But they're still working on what it looks like to hold those values in the right balance.
It's difficult for us as bill proponents, and it's really difficult for legislators because all of the people who usually agree, at least in broad outline, are on different sides of this.
Claudia Polsky.
And you have a bunch of groups that all think they're doing, you know, what's good for inquiry and democracy, right? We're all making the same core moral claim, but it leads us to a very different perspective on records requests.
You know, everyone loves science and everyone loves freedom and government accountability, right?
Whitney Prout.
Those are all things that I think most people would agree are good and important things. And in some ways, they're pitted against each other in this bill.
That's what makes the California effort, AB 700, such an interesting case study in how and even if it's possible to thread this particular needle. If you're looking for a radio story that gets to an answer, this isn't it. Just last week, the assembly member who brought forth the bill pulled it from consideration, at least for this year. In a statement posted to Facebook, Laura Friedman wrote, quote, "My goal was to find common ground that preserves transparency while guarding against harassment from corporations and profiteers." They'll keep trying, she added. Perhaps easier said than done. For On the Media, I'm Alana Casanova-Burgess.
Coming up, once upon a time, we voted for the candidate we liked best. Oh, please. That's so 2018. This is On the Media.